there's a tendency of the media, which is by and large owned by wealthy people, to not write up these little stories. I sometimes feel that some of the best songs I know are not given a chance to be heard on radio. So I say, well, who's interested in this? Why? Well, it's maybe too critical of the establishment in some way. Of course, that's the way it's been for a long time. However, there's alternate media. And it's the alternative media which I put my hope on, whether it's this camera or somebody else's camera or somebody else's printing press.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Well, I roamed and I rambled and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, while all around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. Shining, and I was strolling, the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling, the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, this land was made for you and me.
This land is yours.
Overcome, most of us thought, had been put together in 1946, because that's when the slow version of it was made up, sung by tobacco workers. And a black tobacco worker, a woman named Lucille Simmons, would come out to the picket line, and it was winter time, and they probably had a fire and a big 55-gallon drum. And they say, oh, here comes Lucille. Now we'll hear that song sung slower than anybody's ever sung. And say, we will overcome. No rhythm. It's called long meter style.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, Guy Carawan and Frank Hamilton figured to give it that slow tempo. It's what's called 12-8 time. Four beats, but each divided into three. One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three. And about 4 years ago, I set a book called The Challenge of Interracial Unionism by a professor in the University of Pennsylvania. And there was a Xerox copy of a letter in the United Mine Workers Journal of February 1909. And the letter on the front page says, last year in our strike, we started every strike meeting. Oh, this is in Alabama, where the law said you could not sit together, but the blacks would sit on the left side and right, whites sit on the right side, and up at the table in the center, and the black chairman of the black local and the chairman of the white local sat side by side. So it was purposely a way of thwarting the Alabama law. They obeyed the law. They did not sit together. They had two locals, but they went ahead with one strike. And said, we started every meeting with a prayer and singing that good old song, We Will Overcome. Now, the song which they brought it from was usually sung now as I'll be all right. I'll be all right. I'll be all right. I'll be all right someday. If in my heart I do not yield, or deep in my heart I do believe, I'll be all right someday. I'll be like him, I'll be like him. I'll wear the crown, I'll wear the crown. And a verse, I'll overcome, I'll overcome. So somewhere along the line, some union member changed it to, we will overcome. Now, whether they sang it that fast or they slowed it down, then I don't know. The newspaper article didn't say. But in 1946, Lucille Simmons must have remembered it and slowed it down. And Zilphia Horton, who was a white union organizer, the wife of Miles Horton, she had a beautiful alto voice, and she learned the song from the tobacco workers and taught it to me. And I printed it in our little song magazine, People's Songs, in New York in 1947, just putting it in 4/4 time and saying, sing it very slowly and freely, the way Zilphia picked it up. Mm-hmm. And I tried to sing it with a banjo accompaniment, but it never went anywhere. Until 1960, 13 full years later, Guy Carawan, now the civil rights movement was on in full force. In 1960, he invited about 70 young people for a workshop at Highlander. This is when they were way out in their early farmhouse. 70 was all they could take. And he invited me to come down to it. And they had a whole weekend of called Singing in the Movement. And slow songs, fast songs, serious songs, sad songs, funny songs. And the hit of the weekend was We Shall Overcome. But Guy was now singing it the way we know it now. He gave it a strong, pulsing rhythm. 5 weeks later, in Raleigh, North Carolina, Guy is at the founding convention of SNCC. And somebody shouts from the audience, Guy, teach us all We Shall Overcome. And so this white man from California singing this song from African Americans.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Oh, deep in my heart I do believe we shall overcome someday. We'll walk hand in hand, we walk hand in hand, we walk hand in hand, we walk hand in hand someday. Deep in my heart, I do believe
important verse is the one they wrote down in Montgomery, Alabama. They said, we are not afraid. And the young people taught everybody else a lesson. All the older people that had learned how to compromise and learned how to take it easy and be polite and get along and leave things as they were. The young people taught us all a lesson.
We are not afraid.
There were 60 people in the room, women and children as well as men, in Oklahoma City, trying to start an oil workers' union. 6 men came in with overcoats on, and they didn't take their overcoats off. They just stood against the back wall. And the organizer leaned over to me and Woody Guthrie, the other singer there. Woody was the extraordinary man who wrote This Land Is Your Land and several thousand other songs. He says, those men don't take off their overcoats. They may have clubs under them. They may be intending to break up the meeting. See if you can get the crowd singing. Well, we did get them all singing, the women and kids too. And they never did break up the meeting. Afterwards, they came forward and said, you know, this is different.
a different kind of a meeting than we were told it was going to be. We were told you were a bunch of communists who wanted to overthrow the government.
This song was written by Mill Lampell, Lee Hayes, and yours truly, Peter Seeger, in the spring of 1941. That was the year that Henry Ford was being organized into the CIO. And Woody Guthrie had taught the three of us the old talking blues. You know, if you want to get to heaven, let me tell you what to do. Got to grease your feet in a little mutton stew. And I think Mill, it was, thought of paraphrasing that. And Lee added a verse, and I added a verse. And suddenly we had the song almost completed, except that we hadn't found any solution. All we'd done is add up the problems, but we hadn't found how to solve any of them. And about a month went by, and one day I was sitting up on the roof and realized that there was only one solution to it, the old one of stick together. So I made two verses to end it off, none of them rhymed, and that's how the song Talking Union was born. Now you want higher wages, let me tell you what to do. Got to talk to the workers in the shop with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, boys, won't be long. You get shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take your kids to the seashore. Of course, it ain't quite that simple, so I better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Because if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, we'll all be waiting till Judgment Day. We'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the straw boss then, boys. Now you know you're underpaid, but the boss says you ain't. He speeds up the work till you're about to faint. You may be down and out, but you ain't beaten. Pass out a leaflet, call a meeting, talk it over. Speak your mind, decide to do something about it. Cause the boss may persuade some poor damn fool to go to your meeting and act like a stool. But you can always tell a stool, though, that's a fact. He's got a yellow streak running down his back. He doesn't have to stool, you know. He'll always make a good living on what he takes out of blind men's cups. Well, you got a union now. You're sitting pretty. Put some of the boys on the steering committee. The boss won't listen if one guy squawks, but he's got to listen if the union talks. He'd better. He'll be mighty lonely one of these days. Suppose he's working you so hard, it's just outrageous, paying you all starvation wages. You go to the boss would yell, "Before I raise your pay, I'd see you all in hell." Well, he's puffing a big cigar, feeling mighty slick, thinks he's got your union licked. He looks out the window, and what does he see but 1,000 pickets, and they all agree he's a bastard. Unfair. Slave driver. Bet he beats his own wife. Now, boys, you come to the hardest time. The boss will try to bust your picket line. He'll call out the police, the National Guard, tell you it's a crime to have a union card. They'll raid your meeting, hit you on the head, call every one of you a goddamn red, young patriotic. Moscow agents, bomb throwers, even the kids. Well, out in Detroit, here's what they found. Down in Pittsburgh, here's what they found. Down in Bethlehem, here's what they found. Out in Frisco, here's what they found. That if you don't let red baiting break you up, if you don't let stool pigeons break you up, if you don't let race hatred break you up, if you don't let vigilantes break you up, you'll win. What I mean, take it easy, but take it.
The first step in solving any problem is to get masses of people to admit there is a problem. No doctor can cure a patient if the patient won't admit he's sick. And this is a worldwide problem. And I think one of the first things is to convince everybody that it is a worldwide problem. Some people say, oh, what does it matter if the culture of this or that country dies out? It's a small country. The world will not miss it. And I don't like this aspect of its culture anyway. And because they don't like part of its culture, they want to deny the whole thing. And I think so. One of the first steps, second step then, is to point out that in every culture there are unique and beautiful things which must not be lost. It might be something in sports, or something in language, or something in clothing or food. And if these are lost, the world will be the loser. Not just the little country, but the world as a whole will be the loser. And without taking a lot of time, you could think of immediately certain examples of culture, the world around, which the world would be the poorer for, as I say, in the field of clothing or food, as well as music and art and so on. Then, the third thing, I guess, is to zero in on the problem and think of concrete ways to prevent aspects of a culture from being lost. And here I think some of the experiences of the USA could be valuable. Take folk music, which I have had more experience in than other things, though I'm not an expert, I'm not a folklorist or anything. But I know folklorists, and my father, who is a musicologist, sat down in the 1930s with Alan Lomax trying to figure why the attempts of Europe to revive folk music had seemed to end in failure. The schools tried to teach folk songs to the children, but as soon as the children left school, they forgot about it as quick as they could. The symphonies tried to play folk songs on the concert stage, but no one seemed to want to sing the songs after they left the concert hall. And they came to the conclusion that one of the mistakes was to teach from the printed page. And so in the United States, when people like me, I was a teenager at this time, just learning that there was such a thing as folk music in my country, they said, no, don't learn to read music. Don't learn the music out of a book. Don't learn it from the printed page. Learn it from another performer. And watch the performer with your eyes. Listen to him with your ears. And you may imitate this or that performer a little bit, but sooner or later you will start changing it. And that is good that you change it. In other words, they were not trying to have me imitate exactly what Leadbelly sang or exactly what Woody sang, but rather to get the general principle. I think this is a valuable thing. I felt badly, for example, when I visit some countries and see a grand extravaganza on the stage of their folk music, complete with costumes and an orchestra and an audience of thousands applauding. I don't think that's folk music. I think the best thing about folk music is that ordinary people can make it in their homes, their kitchens. So this would be my first attempt to answer your question.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Sing it! Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me which side.
Welcome, all of you good workers. Good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
We have all the flowers come, long time passing. We have all the flowers gone a long time ago. We have all the flowers gone. Young girls pick them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
Great. Absolutely lovely. Billy, that was wonderful. Just, you know, is the protest song still alive today? Is it as important as it was in Pete Seeger's day?
No, I don't think it is, because it's young people, radicals, have other ways of talking to one another. You know, I'm old enough to remember when music was the way that I identified myself, the bands that I was into, the particularly during punk rock, you know, those bands like The Clash. They inspired me to go to Rock Against Racism, which was the first political thing I ever went to. And that opened a lot of doors for me. And Pete was kind of like that. He was that, I suppose the equivalent now will be that person you follow on Twitter who puts out political ideas and you click on their links and you find stuff out. Well, Pete did that job for people like Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and those people in the early 60s. He helped to draw their interest to issues that he felt very, very strongly about.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely fascinating. So he really was a significant political figure.
I think he really was, because, I mean, when you think about what he did in the 60s with civil rights and the anti-war movement in the United States of America, and he founded one of the first ecology conscious-raising green movements in America, the Clearwater, trying to clean up the Hudson River.
OK, Billy, I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to say that Global will be back same time, same place tomorrow, and you are going to play us out, I think, with If I Had a Hammer.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, hammer in the evening,
all over this land,
hammer out danger,
hammer out danger,
hammer out
war,
hammer out
war, hammer out war,
I'm
gonna make it.
and my wife went all over town. Everywhere we went, the people turned us down. Lord, it's a bourgeois town. Ooh, it's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues. I'm gonna spread the news all around. Come all of you people and listen to me. Don't try to buy no home in Washington, D.C. Lord, it's a bourgeois town. Ooh, it's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues. I'm gonna spread the news all around. Home of the brave, the land of the free. I don't want to be mistreated by no bourgeoisie. Lord, it's a bourgeois town. Ooh, it's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues. I'm gonna spread the news all around.
On the SB line for strikes and out of call, but Casey Jones, the engineer, he wouldn't strike at all. His boiler, it was leaking, and the driver's on the bum, and the engines and the bear, and they were all out of plumb.
Casey Jones
kept his junk pile running.
Casey Jones
was working double time.
Casey Jones
got a wooden medal for being good and faithful on the SB line. The worker said to Casey, won't you help us win this strike? But Casey said, let me alone, you'd better take a hike. Well, Casey's wheezy engine ran right off the wheezy track, and Casey hit the river with an awful smack.
Casey Jones
hit the river bottom.
Casey Jones
broke his bloomin' spine.
Casey Jones
turned into an angel. He got a trip to heaven on the SP line. When Casey got to heaven way up to that pearly gate, he said, I'm Casey Jones, the guy that pulled the SP freight. You're just the man, said Peter, our musicians are on strike. You can get a job of scabbing anytime you like.
Casey Jones
got a job in heaven.
Casey Jones
was doing mighty fine.
Casey Jones
went scabbing on the Angels, just like he did to workers on the SP line. Well, the Angels got together, they said it wasn't fair for Casey Jones to go around a scabbing everywhere. The Angels Union number 23, they sure were there. They promptly fired Casey down the golden stair.
Casey Jones,
I went to hell a flying.
Casey Jones,
the devil said, oh fine.
Casey Jones,
get busy shoveling sulfur, it's what you get for scabbing on the SP line.
Shall run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes strong.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Taken untold millions that they never toil to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity